Hey everyone, happy Tuesday and welcome back to the Anti-Wedding Wedding Club podcast. Today, we have Carrie Ann of Kith & Kin Weddings as a guest and we couldn't be more excited. We reached out to Carrie Ann as she was posting about a feminist wedding and one of the points she brought up was about parents. And we really wanted to have a talk about parents. So in this episode, we'll discuss how to tackle issues with your parents and your mother-in-law, the traditional role they play or played and also still play, and also some tips on wedding planning, how to make sure your partner is in your corner, and more. Before we get into that, I did want to remind everyone, if you can please take just a moment of your time to subscribe and rate to Anti-Wedding Wedding Club on Apple Podcasts, that would be super appreciated. The way that all of this works and how we share our content is by getting more reviews and more ratings. So I would love if that could be something that you guys do if you enjoy the show. Traditionally, parents have always been very involved in weddings, and in some cultures, they still very much are. Parents generally found your spouse for you, as marrying for love is a much more modern concept. Brides had dowries that were paid by for her family, and they were to help the new husband get their life off the ground. And a wedding was a joining of families, of properties, and lineage, depending on the status of the bride and the groom. In time, that shifted to the bride's parents paying for the wedding, a new variation of the dowry, I suppose, till today where couples opt more and more to cover the cost themselves or split between themselves and both families. Even though with modern advances of weddings and culture for a lot of us, many parents still have a big role to play in our wedding day. One of the biggest complaints I used to hear when I did weddings was from brides about their mother or their mother-in-law. Why they both seemed to want to take over the wedding as if it was their own, and in most unfortunate cases, try to ruin the wedding if they don't get their way. Before we jump into the interview with Carrie Ann, she has some really great ways to deal with these things and still keep your sanity, by the way, so I definitely suggest you listen. I do want to bring up one tidbit from my personal life, though. As I've become older, and I'm 33 right now, I have realized who I am and what I want out of life. Well, sort of. I don't think any of us ever have it fully figured out. But I have realized I will never be the kind of woman who can or will deal with a difficult mother-in-law. I have a serious ex. You know, the big one, the one that we thought we were going to marry. And we broke up about 4 years ago. We had some issues, but they were things that could have been worked out with age and just honestly more communication. What was one of the biggest red flags, though, and something that I didn't admit to myself till he had broken up with me, was that his mother was going to make our life, my life, a living hell. Her expectations of who her son should date, not me by the way, I wasn't blonde and skinny enough, how she would monopolize his time so that he would have less time to spend with me, and honestly just the sheer irritation I felt from her that she had to share her son with another woman. I'm honestly grateful he broke up with me. I can't imagine dealing with planning a wedding with her, of dealing with children with her, and I don't think a marriage would have ever survived between me and him with all of that going on. You'll hear bits of this in the interview, but ladies, really pay attention to how your partner is with their mother. Do they always take their side? Will they not stand up for you to them? If they're doing it now, it's likely not going to change once you're married. So for the sake of your sanity in your marriage, answer that question now and really have a conversation with your partner on what all of that means going forward. But this is a really big issue that, especially as wedding planners, we have seen over and over and over again. And I think it's time that people really start having that conversation. All right, let's get on with the interview. To explain who you are, what you do, and how we got connected.
Yeah. So my name is Carrie Ann. I'm a wedding coach, and that's a little confusing for people because they don't know what it means. So I'm a wedding planner, but I've also been a yoga teacher for a few years, and it's always made its way into the way that I work on weddings. So whether that means, you know, handling uncomfortable in-laws or soothing a bride who's stressed out from, you know, 3 hours of photos and is having not necessarily cold feet about walking down the aisle, but maybe sore feet before walking down the aisle. I've been known to give a foot massage or two. I just have a sort of a different way of going about wedding planning. And it was just born of one of my mentors telling me, you know, you're not supposed to be doing the emotional labor with these families. And me being like, but that's my favorite part. So I'm a wedding planner who doesn't shy away from emotional labor. But I'm still a wedding planner through and through. That's my training. That's what I've been doing for over 10 years, almost 15 years. And how did we got connected was we just found each other on Instagram, which seems to be like a great place for making friends these days.
Yeah.
I like follow the anti-wedding hashtag because that's my ideal client. Like my ideal client is someone who is, or couple who are paying for their own wedding. That tends to get rid of issue number one, which is the in-laws. And there are too many opinions. But obviously that's not really going to be possible for everyone, but having an anti-wedding or an unwedding, having something that's a little bit more reflective of you as a couple, rather than all of the expectation and all of the traditions that we sort of feel compelled to partake in when planning our weddings. And you and I both agree that that's just total BS.
Yes.
Your party.
I know. I still do. I like to say I'm semi-retired. I will still do a wedding here and there. I'm like word of mouth only. And it's if I have time because my life, I don't generally have time anymore. But when I would do weddings, I would have to interview the couple first. And then I would interview the bride and the groom separately because I had to make sure that they were the kind of couple that I wanted to plan the wedding. Because, you know, there's a lot of planners that will take any kind of wedding. It's like, it's fine. I just am not the princess cookie cutter wedding person. And I knew if a bride was going to be a bridezilla that I absolutely was not going to spend my time and energy trying to conjure up this image that she had that she, like she would probably be happy with none of it. And like, she didn't even necessarily care about her groom. She just wanted what she wanted. Like that was like the worst bride that I could find. And I was just like, I can't do it. And I refused to. I did it once and I will never do it again.
That's also why I launched a brand in January called Kith and Kin Weddings. So I've been a wedding planner for many years and I got all of my gigs by referral. But last year I had two weddings that really changed the way that I look at my business. And one was like the best couple that I could have worked with. They were so in sync and so, the bride is also a yoga teacher. That's how I met her. We were teaching at the same studio and she had the most blissful wedding journey. And I watched her go through it. Like she was sort of public about it on Facebook saying how much she was enjoying the journey and how there were these little trials, but she felt like they were good for her relationship. And I thought, this is brilliant. And she's doing this. And I didn't give her, you know, all of this magic, but I think I could give that to somebody that was yoga teacher vibes and make them have a really blissed out wedding journey because the engagement often sucks. It's super, it's full of pressure and like just dashed expectations and arguments with your family members. And I think that there's a better way. And so I had that wedding and I was like, I want to give everybody a Jamie wedding. And then I had this other client, which was like you described, just not right, not the right fit for me. Mm-hmm. And I had taken it because, you know, it was a big gig. It was like 3 days, this huge wedding. It was the biggest contract I'd ever gotten. And even though really early on, the clients, one of the mothers, was really disrespectful to me. And my mentor said, you should walk away right now. Like, how she's speaking to you is inappropriate. I was like, no, I can't. I can't walk away from like this much money. And it was a huge mistake because I was miserable. I was having anxiety attacks the week of their wedding. And there was nothing that was going to make these people happy. And we were just not a right fit for each other. Maybe another planner would have been a better fit, but definitely another client would have been a better fit for me. So I was like, I'm going to launch a brand that tells people exactly what I'm about so that people like that are going to see it and go, not the hippy dippy woo woo wedding planner for me, and walk away.
You're like, oh no, I don't want that. You're like, that's fine. Go another way.
If you look at my content and you see like all the yoga stuff and like I talk about human design and like all of the woo and all of the, you know, and like last week I talked about having a feminist wedding, which is what you reached out to me about. That bride would have looked at that and been like, who is this person? No. Perfect. How many weddings can we really do a year, Stephanie? How many can you do in a year?
I refuse to do more than two.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Oh, but you have another job.
Yeah, I am. I run marketing for a tech startup. So when I wasn't doing like the career that I have now, I think at the most I would do like two weddings a season. I would try to push them out throughout the year. I've always been I've said no more than I've said yes, which in hindsight, sometimes that did not help me because it just made people want to use me more because I said no. And I'm like, no, I just really mean I don't have time to do this. So like, you need to find somebody else.
Yeah, I worked as an assistant to the planner for many years, and I like to call myself the Dwight Schrute of event coordinating. and there was one planner who would have two weddings a weekend in the height of the season. And then, you know, because we're in Montreal and it's cold, nothing January through April. So mm-hmm. you really have to, what I would do is like work hard all summer and squirrel away my money. And then January through April, I'd be like on vacation or like diving into some sort of yoga learning practice. But I was saying yes to everything. I'm the opposite of you. And I realized that I would love to be able to say no more. So I guess I'd like, in an ideal world, I would do maybe 12 weddings a year, like one a month, you know, spread out. Mm-hmm. And that would give me the time to really spend time with each client and focus on them rather than having 100. So when you think about it that way, there's enough weddings out there for all of us. There's enough clients out there for all of us, and we don't have to be after each other. Like all of those planners that I worked with, they refer clients to me and I refer clients to them because you can't be in two places at once.
Nope. And especially, I think that it's kind of moving away a little bit from that, but for so long, it was like the coveted time slot to get married in May or June. Like that was when everybody wanted to get married. It was like, you know, take the summer bride. And so that was the worst because there's only so many weekends and there's so many couples. So depending on like where you're getting married, the date, the venue, like all of that, you have to, I mean, luckily the wedding industry is $1 billion industry. There's a million of us doing certain things. So like you can find somebody, there's enough for everybody. In California, most people can get married at any time they want here. So it definitely was easier for me at least to spread it out more because we were talking about earlier, we don't really have seasons here. So you can get married in November and it could be 75 and you're fine. So yeah, it's a little bit different over here, but I totally get that. Well, awesome. I love the idea. I like the idea of a wedding coach because I honestly think some brides really need to be coached. I always felt like a therapist when I was planning weddings because brides would call you and crying into the phone over something that was going on and you had to deal with all of that and make sure they were okay. So yeah, I think that's a really cool idea.
I had a bride a couple years ago. I called her actually, and I could tell something was up. She, you know, she was reticent to talk about it. And finally she said, I'm really stressed out because my partner, like all his friends like kidnapped him for the weekend. And she's just a very organized type of person. And it just, threw her for a loop. Like, he was gone. They showed up, grabbed his passport, and took him, and wouldn't, and like took his phone away. So she couldn't reach him for a couple of days. And it gave her horrible anxiety. She was freaking out. And she had all of this other stuff going on as well. And it's like, if I didn't know those things, if I hadn't reached out and found out those things, I don't think I would have been as good for her on the day at soothing her. But because we'd had those conversations, those sort of personal conversations. And the other thing is, with your planner, and you're going to want to do this, you're going to want to complain about, you know, the distant cousin who wasn't given a plus one, but is somehow bringing a plus one, you know, all of those things. And you can't complain to your partner because it's going to cause friction. Mm-hmm. And you don't feel like complaining to your parents for them to go, well, you know, and put you in your place. So it's nice to have this sort of neutral party who totally gets everything that's going on that you can sort of bounce things off of. And when someone says something to me that's really bananas, like an expectation, like I'll freak out if a baby cries when I'm going down the aisle, right there to go, that's a ridiculous expectation. That's going to happen. Instead of being upset about it or worrying about it, why don't you spend that energy getting okay with it? Mm-hmm. Because it is a huge possibility. If there's babies at the wedding, someone's going to make some noise. And you know what? It's always freaking adorable. Like when the little flower girl starts crying halfway through and can't make it down the aisle, you might think like, oh, that would be the worst. It's not the worst. It's actually hysterical. It like breaks the, you know, the heaviness of the moment in the room. Everybody's laughing together. Like, it's awesome, actually, when that happens. You can't, unfortunately, can't choreograph that, but like, little right. kids are gonna little kid about. Let them do it. So yeah, I think it definitely helps me soothe them on the day that I was there along the way, picking up on all of these little frustrations. And then when they do happen on the day, we can kind of like wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Oh, yeah. You know, that was coming. Yeah. Oh,
like,
well.
I told you that was going to happen.
Take it off. Whatever. So, yeah, I really like I just gave myself a name to encompass what I want to include, which is everything. I just don't, yeah. I don't like to put up too many boundaries with my clients, you know, outside of like, obviously things that are personal or things that are my time, but when it comes to what you can say to me or what I'm willing to talk about, anything.
Yeah. The baby thing though, I had one bride that was really worried, and I'm like, then don't have children at your wedding. Like, yeah, that's the other option. Have a childless wedding, which, I mean, I'll be the first to admit, I will, if I get married, like I will, there will be no kids there because I don't want to deal with it. That's my personal choice. And yeah, hopefully my friends understand, but I had one of my-
Right on your invitation.
Yeah, like no children. The one exception is my best friend's son, Nico. I would potentially consider that one, but like, that's it. But then
you know, it should be little no kids allowed at the bottom of your invitation, like our adults only party,
yeah,
is absolutely fine.
Because 100%.
If you don't do that, people will try to bring their kids.
Yeah.
As much as it's in like our society's vernacular to like not ask, and don't bother the couple, some people just will. Right before my wedding, I had invited a couple that I worked with, and I had invited just them on the invitation. I'm aware they have two kids. They have three now, but at the time I had written their two names on the invitation.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty clear, right? Well, one of them called me and said, hey, just checking, because you didn't invite our kids on the invitation, do I need to get a sitter, or can I bring them to the wedding? So I said, unfortunately, we really don't have space. So they would have taken two seats. So yes, you need to get a sitter. Well, didn't they bring their kids to the wedding anyway and not even say anything to me about it? And I had them seated in a banquette. So there was, wow, no room. Everything had to shuffle. And had I known, you know, I could have wiggled it around, made space, sat them differently, but they just did it anyway. Like, I don't know. And I don't know what happened. I didn't even ask them. I just thought, and it was fine. Like, the kids were cute. They were there. I rolled with it. But people are going to do what they're going to do. So yeah, be as clear as possible, because if you want no kids at your wedding, you better freaking say so.
Yeah.
And they still, and then be okay with people still like totally ignoring you and be like, well, whatever.
That's the one thing that it's like when you're planning and everything. And like, I say this to anyone listening to this, if you are a guest to a wedding or if you are inviting people to a wedding, whoever's names are on the invite is who is invited. If there is a plus one, that means you have a plus one. If it does not say, if it just says Stephanie Serrell and that's it, That means that only I am invited. I am not invited to bring a plus one. It's me. So people don't seem to understand that. I'm like, it's not, they're not really giving you a choice. They're saying like, no, this is who is invited. And then, I mean, you can always ask the bride, but I always feel bad in that situation because then the bride has to be like, well, like they
you
feel bad.
Should feel no. bad.
I know. You should. It's etiquette. People do not get it.
And why is it always on the bride? Like, and what if there's two brides? Who are you? Like, it's just, you should not ask. That's who's invited.
Yeah.
If you're not okay going alone, politely decline. Correct. You're always allowed to decline. But I remember having a good friend ask me if he could bring a plus one to my wedding. And he said, Carrie-Anne, I'm not going to know anyone there. And I said, you're seated next to these people. He was a friend from grad school. So I said, you're seated next to these people who did we did our master's all together. You'll know them. You haven't seen, you know, Luke in years. It'll be great. He's not bringing a date either. It'll be fine. Yeah. Da, da, da. And I said, listen, I already knew what I was going to say. And I think that's another thing that it's really important for the couple to do. And one of the services I offer is simply, even before you hire me, a sit down to figure out what you're going to say when situations like this come up. Because having a one-liner in your back pocket can really save you. So I just spat out what I was saying to everyone. Unfortunately, our venue can only hold 140 guests and I've invited 160. So there's really no room for you to have a plus one. If I have, you know, 139 guesses and I have one extra, I'll let you know.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's a great one.
Yeah. You just need, you need to set boundaries. And it's unfortunate that you have to do it at this already emotionally charged time. But I think it's actually the best time to do it. Because when you sit down with your partner and talk about what your values really are, what's important to you about your wedding, and you come to an agreement, and then you come up with sort of a couple of boundaries you can set with the people around you, you're setting yourself up for success, not just in the planning stages to make that less stressful with these very clear, this is what we're going to say, this is the you know, company policy, but you're setting yourself up for a happy marriage, because you have to set those boundaries with your in-laws and your parents, who, like, if you're planning on having kids, do you really want their say-so in everything? It's really important to start setting boundaries now with the people around you and saying, we're a couple and we're on the same side.
That's a big thing. So, and actually, in that, now that you say that, that's kind of what we're going to talk about today. So we've been winding up to this topic. So the topic basically is parents. So both sets of parents. Them paying for the wedding, why traditionally they have paid for the wedding, and then kind of what that means and how you deal with and maybe why you should not allow your parents to pay for the wedding. One of the biggest things, the biggest complaints, and even when I did weddings ever, was the mother-in-law or the bride's mom. Like, those were always the two biggest contention points. And then with the mother-in-law, that the groom was not on the bride's side because his mom was causing issues. So it was like, that was always like the big thing. And I'm like, oh, good Lord, girl, I know. So, you know, one thing I did, I'm going to do a little intro to this later, but one thing that I do want people to understand is the tradition is that the bride's family pays for the wedding for most of it, right? And that's like the old, old tradition. That became a tradition because it stems from when brides' families used to pay a dowry back in medieval times. So basically, I'm going to pay you to marry my daughter and take her off my hands.
As I heard one father say in a speech when I was a cater waitress, she's your problem now.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
So basically,
at the time I thought it was funny, but now as a grown-up feminist, I'm like,
yeah.
Why the fuck did I think that was funny?
Right.
Sorry if you bleep me out.
Oh, no, you're fine. I swear all the time. My mom hates it. No, so that's the thing. It's like the bride's family would pay to have their daughter marry because God forbid you had girls because nobody wanted to deal with that. And then from there, it turned into the bride's parent. Yeah. Oh my God, I really cannot talk today, you guys. I think I need more coffee. The bride's parents paying for the majority of the wedding. And now, obviously, that's shifted over the years, and a lot of people opt to pay themselves, or you know, they pay a piece of it, the groom's parents pay a piece, and then the bride's parents pay a piece. It bothers me as, like, just a whole that the reason this tradition exists of parents being so involved is because it was basically bribery money to get rid of a daughter. And then, you know, this isn't the 1950s anymore. We don't need to do the exact same thing that our parents did and that they did before that and they did before that and have this, like, wedding that it has to be exactly the same. I think a lot of it, too, stems from back in the day. You got married really young, right? So, like, even let's take a wedding in the 40s or the 50s. You got married when you were in your late teens or early 20s. You had probably never dated for that long. A lot of people hadn't even had sex yet. You definitely didn't live together before. And you had nothing. You didn't have, you went from your mother's house, whether you're the bride or the groom, into the house that your parents probably bought for you to, like, start a family. You pop out some babies and then, like, there you go. That was what you did. So now when people are getting married and they're older and they have careers and they have two incomes, we don't have that situation anymore. So, like, if I get married and I'm 35, I already have an entire house. I already have money. Like, I don't need my
definitely
mom.
Don't need to register for fine china.
Correct. And also why? Just why? Nobody, no.
I don't like them, but.
I'm just terrified they're going to break. So then I never want to use it. My mom has a set and I refuse to touch it. I'm like, I won't do it.
Yeah. You need a whole episode on how to get people to give you cash.
Yes.
That's all you want. That's all anyone wants. I'm saying it now in case anyone's not clear. All we want is cash.
Yes.
It's not just a Jewish thing. I come from a Jewish background and I do a lot of Jewish weddings. Very common. Every time someone gives me a gift at a Jewish wedding, I'm like, what? This is the one person who didn't get the memo, clearly not Jewish, brought like a massive gift. They don't want to bring it home, okay? It's super annoying.
Just yeah, and also cash. I already have everything. If I want
also,
it,
we're grown ups and we have everything. Yeah. We yeah. don't need I got three or four decanters for my wedding. I was like, we get it. We like we're alcoholics. Thanks for the memo.
It's like, by the way, I also already own one. I like these, I've seen these ones where you can do it online to where people just put money, they donate money towards the honeymoon. I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because we're all going to be spending how much on the wedding? Go help pay for my honeymoon. That's all I want. I don't need anything else.
Yeah.
But anyways, so the whole parents thing. So the reason why I answered you on Instagram was because you went on about kind of the feminist wedding and you brought up the parent point, which I think is very important and one of the biggest issues that we face as brides and then also as a wedding industry. So what is your kind of view on parents and the role they play and what they should play and, like, do they pay, do they not pay, like all that kind of stuff?
So when it comes to your wedding budget, you know that budget and guest list happen sort of symbiotically, right? So it depends how much your wedding is going to cost is going to depend on how many people you want there. It's going to depend on a lot of other things too, like the scale, the, you know, how fancy, for lack of a better word, you want it to be. The guest list is really tied in with the budget. So if you don't want your parents' friends at the wedding, then you can't demand that your parents pay for the wedding, right? So those things are going to work together. So you want to think about, what's my guest list? What's my partner's guest list? I mean, that's something you can kind of sit down and do separately and then do together. Sometimes it flows a little better if you just have some quiet time and just write. And then come together and you'll see where the doubles are. Obviously, you'll include all of the extended family that you think is important to invite. And then your parents will have their own guest list. So if you're smart about it from the beginning, then you'll let your parents know that their guest list is going to be very limited. So at the same time as you're doing this guest list budget situation, you're considering venues, which is also meaning considering caterers. This is probably the most frustrating thing for people planning a wedding that you and I know very well, which is nothing's ever tied up in a bow. We're still always revisiting things all the way up to the day, and that can be really stressful. I personally like having like seven pans in the fire, but not everyone does. That's why I'm a wedding planner. So when it comes to having those conversations with your parents now, you really want to present a united front as a couple. So that's why I always recommend having these sit downs with your partner and coming up with what are your values and what are the boundaries that you're going to set with the people in your life. So normally when you get engaged, your parents will let you know right away if they're going to pay anything at all for the wedding. But just know that if they're investing, that comes with a caveat of my friends are going to be invited and I'm going to have a say in certain things. So you really want to sit down with your partner and decide how much are we going to allow them to invest and how much of a say are they going to get that goes along with that. So before you accept that money, you need to know what you're agreeing to, because that's kind of a contract, right? They've given you however much. Let's use a round number. Let's say they're giving you 10 grand towards your wedding. And they're thinking that that covers, you know, their 50 guests. So do you want 50 of their friends at your wedding that you hadn't counted on having, you know, or do you want, maybe that's 25 family, 25 friends, so 12 couples. Are these people that you know? Are these people that you grew up with and that you're happy to have at your wedding? Like for my wedding, I had a mantra of only people who love us in the room. And that was how, that was a boundary that my husband and I set around the parents inviting people, because our parents did pay. We had two weddings, which is another story. But at our big Montreal wedding, we had set that boundary. Like I said, we only had room for 140 guests. We both have a lot of friends from here and from Europe and big families. My husband already is not like the most outgoing, competent person. He's comfortable with people that he knows. And so we just didn't want to have to go say hi to 350 people and not enjoy our wedding day, or have people that we don't know very well, like have to suddenly have a relationship with them. Like they're at the most important day of our lives thus far. So I said, I just don't want people that I don't know in the room. And we back and forthed over it a lot. But in the end, I'm happy to say there were 5 people that I had never met before at my wedding, which is a huge win.
That's definitely a win.
Yeah, that's really hard. Listen, but I know people who have had 0 people that they don't know at their wedding. That's the goal, right?
That will be me.
Yes. So think about that in terms of scale. Like, do you want a smaller wedding? That's a way that you can let your parents know, listen, we only want 50 or 70 people at our wedding, or 100. There's just no room for that. You've got to cut the fluff, you know? And then you're giving them something that they can say to their friends, because there is this sort of idea of, well, they invited me to their kid's wedding, so they have to be invited to mine, my kid's wedding. And it's like, okay, but it's my wedding. So this brings me to something that comes up a lot with my clients, which is the parents think the wedding is about them.
Mm-hmm.
They really do. And I kind of understand why. Have you seen Sex Education, the Netflix show?
I watched the first season. I don't think I finished the second one yet.
Are two? I love the show. I think it's so funny.
It's so the one with the mom is the sex therapist, right?
Yes. And yes. The kid, okay. I don't think this is a spoiler, but I think in the final episode of the first season, or the second, he says to her, like, I'm not you, you know, I'm my own person. And she's like, you are me. Like, and this is how it feels for parents. Like, you came from me, you're an extension of me. And so this is my wedding, right? This is my time to shine. So there's a really fine balance there with your parents of making them feel really welcome and included, because not all parents are mom and dad Zillas. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they'll just go, sure, whatever you want, honey, here's 10 grand and do what you want. And that's what I really recommend is when they offer you that gift, say, like, what are the strings attached to this? Like, is this a gift? Is this a gift for me to spend as I want on my wedding? Or are there strings attached? Find out before you accept that gift. So that would be the number one thing to do. And then the number two thing to do is obviously to sit down with your partner and set those boundaries and say, okay, this is what we're going to allow. You can always say no to the gift and have a little bit of a smaller scale wedding.
Yeah, that's not that hard to do right now, given that COVID is here. So I feel like even moving into the future of the next couple of years, and that maybe when people realize that it's easier to have a smaller wedding, I kind of feel like smaller weddings are definitely going to be kind of a newer thing. I mean, they've been around obviously for a while, and I think they've been gaining speed on popularity, but I do think that's going to force it a little bit, where it's like, you can't have a wedding with more than 50 people.
Yeah. They've been around for two main reasons, I think. One is for people who are on a budget, it's just, it's more budget friendly to do a smaller wedding. So mm-hmm. if you're going to say no to your parents' money, if you can, because not everyone's in a position to say no to that, then having a smaller wedding can help you stay on budget and still have the wedding of your dreams. And then the other reason people, I think, are doing smaller weddings is because they've realized that it's a monumental occasion and they don't need 150, 200, 500 people in the room. And that's definitely cultural. That's not going to be true for everybody. So I'm really saying these smaller weddings are more so secular weddings mm-hmm. because religion tends to come with of necessities for the wedding, things that have to be included. But having a small wedding is really that understanding of the intimacy of this moment. And I mean, how many people do you need to have a good party? Maybe 30, 40, 50? So if you can do a smaller wedding for that reason, for really saying, like I said, only people who truly cherish and love us and that we want there on this day, because do you really want to be looking back? I mean, it's only been 7 years since my wedding, and there are people who are in that room that I'm not friends with anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. And that was the one thing I really didn't want, and it still happened. So you can't make guarantees about it, but you can do your best to make sure that your wedding is reflective of you.
Yeah. The one thing I was kind of wondering, and I like that the sex education reference that you gave, like, but you are me, like the mom, the parents. And I think that's a really interesting concept. I was having this conversation with a friend who is kind of deciding if she wants to have kids or not. The one thing I told her was, I'm like, you have to remember, I think, especially nowadays, if you're having a child, you need to also allow that child to be who they are. They're not you. You're not, if the reason why you're having a child is to have a mini me and then to hopefully have them do things that you didn't do in your life that you want them to do, and that is how you look at it, you know, I won't say don't have kids, but you really should relook at why and that how that's going to affect them in their life. So I think that when it comes to the wedding, and it is really hard, I think that the thing that always shocks me is a lot of people think the wedding is about them that are not the bride and the groom. Bridesmaids do this. Wedding guests do this. Parents definitely do it. The mother-in-law definitely does it. But it's just always so shocking to me because, you know, maybe they do it because their parents did that to them and like that's just what they think it means for them to be part of the wedding. But truth be told, the wedding is just about the two people getting married. And I'm really lucky. My mom is one of those moms that would just be like, I don't have any say in what you're doing for this. So like do whatever you want. And I already know that I would pay for it myself. But yeah, if she came to me and was like, here's a list of people I want to invite. I mean, I don't even know what I would do. I'd be shocked. I'd be like, what do you mean that you want to invite these people to my, what, how, why, how does that work? I have a list in my head. I'm like, how many people would I want at my wedding? So I made a list of the family, and then the must haves, like the friends. And then I have a wait list at the bottom of like, if it was bigger or smaller. Yeah. Sorry. If you're on the wait list, guys, mind you, I'm not even engaged. So like, there's no rush.
Those people are like, we know who we are.
But you know, like my mom's best friend who I've known my entire life, she is on that list as a must have. Because like she's a huge part of my life. And I don't think that my mom would ever say like, oh, you need to invite this person or that person. My biggest fear though is that the man I marry, his parents are not going to be like my family.
Yeah. So I think there's a reason that the parents get so invested in the wedding, especially if they didn't have the wedding of their dreams. Like you said, this is sort of a generational thing where their mother or mother-in-law sort of controlled what happened on their wedding day, and now this is their opportunity for a redo. So they want to live vicariously through you and have the wedding of their dreams. It's a really hard thing to do. I told you about my client from hell from last year, and mm-hmm. the bride was not, she wasn't the bride from hell. She knew what she wanted, but it was her mother-in-law. Her mother-in-law had something to say about everything. She didn't like the flowers that the bride had chosen, and she called the florist, and she called the venue to try to convince the venue to tell the bride not to have it, not to have those flowers. And it was like, the bride had to say, you need to stop. And she ended up saying it in an email to all of us. So we're all on this email thread where she's like, this will not stand. You need to back off. And I was like, this wedding is just, what the hell is going to happen? And it was a huge drama. Even on the wedding day, I've never seen anything like it. This is starting off your relationship on the wrong foot. And you really, this is why you really need to have those conversations with your partner about them backing you up with their parents. Because you're going to start off your marriage with a lot of animosity between you and your in-laws if your partner is not backing you up or even having those conversations with his own parents. Like, I don't have this issue because my in-laws are absolutely lovely. But if I ever had to say anything to them, I would need my husband to be on the same side as me. Like, he would literally need to physically be next to me as we had this in-person conversation, nodding along. Maybe he wouldn't say it out loud, but he would say, I'm on Carrie Ann's side. We are on the same side. So that was a huge issue. Like, the groom not backing her up when she had all these issues and saying like, oh, I don't want to be involved in this, too much for me. Well, then elope. There's a lot of ways around it. If you really have it, like the in-laws from hell, then you need to have a conversation with your partner about the role that they're going to play in your lives, because this isn't going to end after the wedding. It's not just about the wedding. That's a very emotionally charged. It's not just about the flowers. It's about you taking my child away from me and starting a new life with them. And I'm not okay with that. And I want to stake my claim. That's what it's really about. So, you know, that was the wedding where my mentor was saying, you're not a family therapist. And I was like, I know, should I go to family therapist school? Like, should I get this degree? Because I feel like I need to be in this situation. I really wanted to fix it for them so badly. And I couldn't, because there really are going to be some things that are out of my control. Just hard to know, as I'm a Taurus and I like to have control over everything. So that is something where maybe they did need to go see a family counselor before the wedding and have this conversation with a professional. Because that was really, it's about you have to know when it comes to your in-laws and silly things like flowers, it's about something way more than that. If you're fighting this hard about it, it's become really emotional. It's about something more than that. And I really would strongly advise like a family counseling session.
It's so interesting, though. Sometimes I do think it is the flowers, because I had a mother-in-law do the same thing where she literally, and I don't know how, I have never yelled at a florist the way I yelled at this one florist, but the florist did change the order because the mother-in-law called. And I'm like, are you out of your mind? And so luckily I caught it before the day of the wedding, and like I made them change it and all that stuff. But I called the mother-in-law, and the bride was like the sweetest thing on the planet. She had no backbone. So she just was kind of like letting it go. And I called the mother-in-law and I said, listen, you get to decide right now what, because actually the husband, her son, was getting really, really upset. So it's kind of the opposite. Usually it's the bride that's getting upset. Her son was actually the one that was getting very upset with his mom, because she was just being horrible. And I said, listen, you have a choice. What relationship do you want with your son and his wife? Because they are going to go start their own family. And if you are going to be this wicked witch of the West, horrendous person that is ruining their wedding, first off, and then you're going to continue to do this, and I can only imagine how you're going to be when there's grandchildren in the picture. There is a line that you can cross to where it's going to be too much. And if you might not have the relationship that you want with them. And I said, so I highly suggest you calm down. And I was like, and then on the other end, if you ever change an order that I've made ever again, I will ruin your life. Like, we're not playing with that anymore. And shockingly, she got really mad at me when I said all of that. She's like, this isn't your place. And I was like, it's my place to stand up for my clients. You're not my client. You're not paying for me. They are. So I will say whatever I want. And she did, though, like after a couple of days, she did email me and she's like, I talked to my husband and like, you have some good points. I was shocked. And she did not completely back down. I mean, she was still her at her core, but like she did calm down a little bit. And I was like, okay, well, thank God for that. Yeah, I think that watching brides and grooms go through this, though, it's one of the biggest red flags that you could ever have before you start your life together. And I think that, like what you're saying, it's like, it's not about the flowers or like about the song that plays or the wedding list and like whatever who's invited. It's about that this mom clearly is very not happy about her son getting married and about the changes that that's going to bring and having another woman in his life being in charge of, you know, that, of what they do. They're going to continue to do this in everything. And it will only get worse if you have kids, if you ever want to move or like any of those kind of things. Like, this doesn't end with the wedding. And so, yeah, I feel like if you can't deal with it, you know, in a productive way, or if your partner doesn't back you up, because usually I think in most cases, the only person that can get this mother-in-law to back down is the son, or is the, you know, if it's two brides or two, you know, whoever's parent that is. That's the one that can go to their mom and say, I love you so much, but like, this isn't okay. The bride or the partner saying it, I don't think holds as much weight without the backing of the person's child. So you have Absolutely. To be on that united front. If you aren't, it's like, yeah, he's never going to have your back. If he's not going to do it on the wedding day, he's not going to do it with her ever again. So Exactly. You have to decide if you're okay with that. And that's a big question, but it's a very important one.
It is. And that's, you know, as a planner from my side, I no longer accept contracts that are signed by parents. They have to be signed by the couple. That's who my client is. Doesn't matter who's paying me. At the end of the day, the e-transfer of check can come from anywhere, but the client is the couple. So, because you can put yourself in a really bad position of having to play go-between and, you know, massage the words of the in-laws to feed it to the couple to get what your client wants. The client has to be the couple. So that's why it's so important to me that people either pay for their own wedding or that the money that they get from parents is a gift for them to spend as they choose and doesn't come with all these strings attached. And if there are strings, that those are things that have been agreed on by both people and that there won't be surprises. So I totally understand parents wanting to have their friends at the wedding. And if it was my parents, I would just have that conversation with them. And when I had to have that conversation with my in-laws, when they, you know, sprung it on us that they wanted to invite yet another couple, as we had already finalized the guest list and it was just two more seats that we didn't have. And I cried and I stressed and I called my mom and tried to get her to take off two of her guests. And she surprisingly put her foot down and I was, you know, there was a lot of Xanax and Chardonnay in my wedding planning experience. And it was not blissful. And I wish that I had sat down with my partner and we had really come up with some strong boundaries and had those conversations, because this is the other thing, is if you don't have those conversations with your partner, if you don't have these values and boundary setting conversations and decide to be on the same side, and have conversations about what your expectations are going into this marriage, your first year of marriage is going to suck. Mm-hmm. Because you're going to have all of these expectations about how they're going to be as a wife or a husband or a partner, and they're going to have expectations of you, and they won't have been discussed. And if they're not out in the open, they're just simmering under the surface, breeding argument. Stupid little arguments. Always starts about dishes. It's always about something bigger than that.
Mm-hmm. It's actually really good marriage advice. It always seems like it's some surface level thing, but really, truly, honestly, it's something else entirely that's just what set it off.
It's not about dishes. It's about your lack of respect for whatever. But the dishes element. Also marriage advice, get a fucking dishwasher. You need a dishwasher.
100%.
We still don't have one. We're in this apartment that doesn't have a dishwasher hookup. And luckily we have an agreement that my husband does all the dishes. That's just our agreement. It's awesome.
There you go. I would love that agreement. I like to cook. I would love if somebody just washed. I can just picture it now though. You're like 8 months into the marriage and like they put their socks on the floor and then you're yelling at them. Yeah. It's like, and then you're yelling at them and you're like, you didn't have my back on the wedding day with your mother.
Exactly.
20 years later.
You're putting, you know, in marketing, they always say, like, what are you saving your clients? Are you saving them time? Are you saving them energy? Are you saving them money? Right? And I like to to show how I can save all three, but the point is you're putting time, energy, and money, a lot of all three of those resources, your only really valuable resources, all of your time, all of your energy, all of your money into this one day. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of reasons why you might not enjoy that day. It's not always, it's, you know, for my clients, it's really rare that they don't enjoy their day. But if you don't enjoy your wedding day, you are going to feel, because of all of that buildup, you are going to feel empty at the end of it. Really, really disappointed. And that feeling just doesn't go away for a very long time. That'll be something that is really hard to let go of over time. And I actually had this idea to get reverse testimonials for my website of people who wish they'd had me for their wedding, because I talk to people who've been married for 10, 20, 30, 40 years who say the same thing. You know, I wish I'd had a planner. I wish I'd had a coach. I wish I'd had somebody to guide me through this because I hated my wedding day. I wish I'd had a day of coordinator because I was doing it all myself. Arguing with my mother-in-law about the table arrangement, who was going to be closer to the dance floor on the day in my white dress, rearranging tables. Well, someone told me that and I was like, why weren't you sitting having your feet massaged by me? This is not normal.
But it's true. People don't forget. I mean, your wedding could literally have been two decades ago and you will remember that it was not what you wanted.
Absolutely.
But I also think on like, there's two ways to, I think that's definitely true. And then there's two ways. Like one thing that I always said to my brides was there are going to be things that go wrong no matter what we do. And the day of, we can try to mitigate that as much as humanly possible leading up into the wedding. But the day of, if something goes wrong, roll with it. Don't let it stop you from enjoying. Like, we'll deal with it and we'll fix it. But like, there are going to be things that happen and it'll be fine, because at the end of the day, you're getting married to the love of your life, and that really is all that matters.
Piece of advice to don't look at those conversations as difficult conversations. I tell my clients to make a ritual out of wedding conversations and have them not be on the table all the time, so that it's not like, oh, by the way, blah, 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 wedding. Oh, by the way, while we're picking up groceries, yada, yada, wedding. It should be, we're not talking about the wedding except for this designated time when we're talking about the wedding. So it's not always on the table. And when it is on the table, on the literal table, set the table. Put out, you know, an expensive candle, or diffuse some like soothing essential oils, or like we, because my husband's French, we do apéro. So I would say put out like, you know, a bottle of wine and a yummy snack, and just set the scene. Put on a favorite album or music that you're considering for the wedding. Set the scene and set a timer for like max an hour, but it could be shorter than that. Have a list and just go over the things. Sit there and like, or even just like you know, spitball, like we've been doing. We didn't have like an agenda for this meeting, but just have a conversation. A minimum, like once a week, I would say is good. If you have 1 hour a week to work on your wedding, you should be able to do it, especially if you have a planner.
I love this idea so much. It's like, I'm going to send you a calendar invite, and on Thursday night after dinner at 8 p.m., we're going to spend an hour, and then we're going to not talk about it until next week. I love
yes.
that idea.
And even if they hate talking about weddings, they'll at least be soothed by the fact that they won't have to talk about it the other, you know, 6.85 days. Like, they barely have to deal with it. Just this one point, we're going to sit and do this thing that might be uncomfortable, but it might not, because there's going to be great wine and snacks, mm-hmm. and we're going to laugh, and we're going to get on the same page, and those conversations will become easier over time. And then when you are married and you have to have difficult conversations, you can bring up that routine, you can set the table and say, we need to talk about whatever it is, you know, instead of having those uncomfortable or important conversations sort of always happening but never being resolved. You have a sit down of a set amount of time where you just work out the details, and the rest of the time you can just be two people in love.
That's a really good way to kind of wrap it up. I think that and as a whole, the moral of what we kind of have talked about is, whether it's your spouse, your friends, your mother-in-law, your own mom, you know, you just have to set expectations and communicate and not be afraid to have what, you know, you might think is a difficult discussion, but might actually not be a difficult discussion if you just calmly set out about what you were trying to say to the person. I honestly think that would solve so many issues, like across the board. And then also, it's really good training for marriage. There you go.
Yeah.
And then also, guys, if you don't want to deal with your in-laws and stuff, don't let them pay for the wedding.
Exactly.
That's the other option. Pay for it
yeah,
yourself.
Yeah, if they're not paying, you can say, listen, thank you so much for your input, but this is our wedding. Mm-hmm. You know, and even pretend, like, oh, we'll try our best to accommodate this request. Some of the requests are fine. You know, I need this to be the song for the mother-son dance. Okay. Come on. In that case, I would say just one of my old bosses used to say, like, just give them the pickle. You know, like if somebody wants an extra pickle on their, just give it to them. Come on. It's not going to cost you anything. Sometimes you have to give a little. They pay for it. Sometimes you have to do it. We're an atheist, my husband and I, and we had a rabbi at our wedding because my dad was paying for it.
I look at this way in everything. Is it worth it to put your foot down on one or two small things? Or is it easier just give in to like a small thing that's really not going to affect the wedding? And then be able to put your foot down on something big. Because if you put your foot down on everything, then you'll just be difficult, right? And I always kind of think you have to choose your battles. But then also, it's so easy to appease people. I've done it. I do it at work. They'll like, Stephanie, I have this amazing idea. They'll send me it. I'm like, mm-hmm, yeah, that's great. I'll definitely think about that. And then I never bring it up again.
Yeah.
But they're happy. They were heard. And you know, if it does happen to be a good idea and I can use it, then I will. But if not, I'm like, whatever. But I don't say no. I'm just like, oh, thank you so much. I'll see if that fits into something. And then just never talk about it again.
That's a great idea for me to venture into, like give my clients techniques to make people feel as though they were heard without mm-hmm. actually following through on any of the things they asked you for.
Sometimes people just want to feel like they've been seen and heard. All right. Well, I love all of that. I've kept you 10 minutes over.
Thank you so much. This is really fun. As I told you, I was really, I was planning on pitching to you to be on your podcast when you reached out to me, and I was like, oh my God, universe. So thank you so much for having me.
Yeah,
I love this podcast. I can't wait to hear our episode.
I know. Thank you so much. And then do you want to plug your stuff one more time so people can find you on like Instagram and stuff?
Sure. So I'm on Instagram at Kith Kin Weddings, and my website is kithandkinweddings.ca because we're in Canada. But I work all over the world. I have a virtual offer coming up soon. So right now you can get the jumpstart from me for half price. So for $147, It gives you a questionnaire to fill out and then a 75-minute call with me with a recording, and you'll end up with your values and your wedding mantra. So really the boundaries that you can set with your parents, and just a mantra going forward so that you know where you're going to design your dream wedding. And if you get that in before August 15th, then you'll get $300 off my upcoming journey, which is full-scale wedding planning. It includes 6 months of Voxer access to me and 4 one-on-one calls, including a framework for planning your whole wedding, from budgeting, guest list, venue and caterer, right down to planning the day with your on-the-day coordinator. We can do a conference call. So that's it. I'm pivoting into virtual wedding planning, and I think it's going to be really fun. It's going to give me the opportunity to travel all over the world and meet a lot of anti-brides and grooms.
Yeah.
And help people plan the wedding of their dreams.
Awesome. I love it. Well, if and when I ever do get married, I'll let you know. So then you can like keep me from going insane, because I am type A and I feel like I will probably get a little stressed even though I do this.
I'd love to help you, Stephanie. Thank you so much.
All right, my dear. Well, we will chat with you later and have a good rest of the day.
You too. Thanks.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Guys, that was episode 8, and we hope that you enjoyed the conversation with Carrie Ann as much as we enjoy talking to her. Make sure to check out her Instagram. She's got some really solid advice for brides-to-be, and even if you are not married or already married and you're just interested in the wedding industry, she's a great follow. Her advice is very solid, I think. Anyways, we will see you guys next week.